Yes.
I'm here.
Okay.
All right, let's move this up here.
I have to do this so I can see your face.
It's radio. You don't need that.
I need your face.
Are you going to start singing?
Oh, God, I need your face.
First time?
I need people's faces in my life. I need more faces near and close. We need one of those, what is that clacker called?
Is it a clapboard?
Clapboard?
I don't know what, the movie thing?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Is that, I think it's a clapboard.
Yeah.
Or something like that. It's a,
k-ch.
Yeah.
K-ch. I like that. So, do you listen to Books on Tape ever?
I don't, no, not really.
Not even, you have a 30, 40 minute commute?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in the car about an hour a day, so it would make sense. I'm usually, but honestly, when I'm coming into work, I'm usually listening to news.
Right, yeah, getting ready.
And then when I'm going home, I put on music most of the time.
Right.
Yeah, I think I'd probably end up sitting in the driveway too much and
right.
just listening to the book.
I go through phases where I'm interested in that, sort of like going through phases where I want to listen to certain music, but...
It's one of those things that seems like a great idea, but at the same time, I'd rather just kind of pick up the book, read a few pages while I could, and then if I got interrupted, I could put it right down. It seemed like it would take more of an effort to pause it and have the device and headphones.
Yeah, I mean, you got to work at it a little bit.
Yeah.
You definitely do. But I did a subscription, if that's the proper way to say it. Did a subscription to Audible.
Yeah, that's what it is, right? I mean, it's still a subscription.
I don't know what it is. I don't know if you do it.
You send a telegram, and a subscription will come to you in the mail once a month.
I performed a subscription on myself for Audible.
I'm pretty sure it's not legal in the state, but okay.
But all the books that I've got from you, so you get like whatever it is, $15 a month, and you can get one book a month. I don't know what this is, but all the books that I've gotten for the last 3 months have been just the weirdo selections. Like I'm overcome. Like I'm trying to pick a book that I want to listen to.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking,
do they give you like a choice? Or do
yeah,
you,
there's
you
a million
from,
books. Okay. There's tons. You know, there's like, you could listen to old books or brand new books or whatever you want to listen to. So my most recent mistake, it might not be a mistake. You know, it's like one of those like buyer's remorse thing, I bought this like, it's like 100 hours long, this book. It's The History of the World. It's a nonfiction history of the world. Written by this British guy. It was published in the 70s, and it's a history of the world updated. It's the new one, the most recent one that came out. But it's, you know, it's immense.
Did the history change? Were we not paying attention?
Well, he said the update came 10 years after the original book was published, and he has a very long preface in which he describes why an update was necessary when only 10 years had gone past, and his book covers, you know, basically millions of years. You know, why should it? But he makes a good point that certain new things had come to light, discoveries had been made, you know, certain things had shifted in the historical sense, so why not bring them up and make changes?
Sure.
But I think I was just going to get some, you know, fun book to listen to. Some light bit of something to listen to while I drive down here, or you know, go out to a story or something like that. Because you know, there's no story that I ever drive to that's 10 minutes away.
It's always
like
an hour and a half.
Yeah. So I'm reading the history, and I realize as I'm browsing, and I see this weird book, History of the World. I realize I don't really know much about the world, and I still feel that sort of guilt, you know, that you might feel about not knowing.
You get to a certain point in your life, you think, I should know that.
I know nothing about, you know, if you asked me to, I could probably fill a page of world events.
Really?
And some of them would be mistakes and wrong. And just putting, you know, just terms of accuracy.
Geography and so on, like you wouldn't be able to identify where a particular region is.
It would be really poor.
Yeah.
Whatever I create.
I'm with you.
It wouldn't be good. It's in the same way, I have a really strong desire to know. I'd love to know what's around me. Like, I wish there was some nature expert who would just take me by the hand and lead me through the grass toward the bushes and the weeds and the flowers toward our river and tell me the names of everything. Like, this kind of grass is called this. this little bush over here is this, this little flower is this. I'd like to learn all those things and something about them, go to the river.
Do you want to learn that because you want to learn more about it in a scientific sense, or because you might be more observant if you did?
I feel like knowing it would allow, I mean, I think the more you know something, the more you see it. And as it is, I think I look out and I see some green grass and a little river going through and some trees.
It tends to be kind of just a blur at that point. It's just background wallpaper.
Very simple. I'm looking at a really simple thing, mm-hmm. and I'm not getting much out of it. And I think
you don't see any detail.
No, and it's not that I feel bad about that, but I think that I think it could be enriched in some way. It's not just knowing the names of things like that's a daisy or whatever, but it's, I guess, realizing the sort of myriad vital forms that are out there and the way that they're living, you know, together. You know, there's a whole universe of bugs out there and frogs and little fishies and that live alongside me.
You're not seeing the whole ecosystem because you're so far above it.
Yeah, I'm just like...
I think if you have somebody that would point out some details like that to you, you tend to just get down and really look at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You tend to stop. You're not going over it anymore.
Right.
You're not sweeping over it like, okay, I've taken it all in. You're getting down at that level and you're just stopping for a few minutes and you're actually focusing on something. And when you do that, you suddenly see things around it.
Right.
In more detail, and then it opens up a little bit.
Well, it's like you get to live with it when you didn't even know it was there.
Sure.
For Sam's ninth birthday, we got him a telescope, so we've been looking at
that's great.
The moon and planets, and we've seen Saturn, and we've seen the moons of
we've
Jupiter
been looking for Saturn every night, but it's too low to the horizon
low.
For us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've been thinking that maybe we got to, on a clear night, we got to head out to a
Do you guys have a telescope?
We don't. We just have binoculars.
Okay.
I'd like to get a telescope.
The telescope, you can see the rings.
You can.
Yeah, you can.
Really?
Yeah, even with
with a small telescope, yeah.
Yeah, ours is like maybe $200.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a telescope you get at the supermarket. You know, those
right.
ones.
Right, it's
like
a little kind of a mid-level.
But I think you can, even with a good, bad telescope. See those things, maybe not too clearly. I think that's the problem. Might be really fuzzy, but yeah, you can see Saturn, you can see Jupiter,
and the moons around Jupiter.
You can see these little moons, floating, and you can, on a really clear night, you can see the colors of Jupiter.
It's amazing,
and it's in some ways, I feel more within the universe now that I'm paying attention to these distant few things. I feel more, this thing sliding above me. It's not an amazing difference, but it's some difference. And I think I'm thinking of, the addition that it might make. I don't need to add anything to my world, I guess, but I think I feel a little separate from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that separation comes from me not knowing it as well as I might. It's like a train that's pulled away a little bit, and I'm trying to glimpse, whether I was supposed to be on it or not, and I can't tell. So I'd like to learn, in the same way I want to learn, I think I was thinking, it'd be nice to know world history. And, very simply I was thinking, this will provide context for something, I don't know what, but it'd just be a way of looking at the planet or looking at mankind and... I don't know why. I've been listening. I listened to it all the way down, and I'm still in the preface.
Really? Preface is an hour and a half long?
It's very long.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, is it written in a heavy-handed way? Is it very...
No, it's very...
Victorian, or is it...
It's delightfully British.
It's delightfully British.
Yes, there's a lot of adverbs. And
Excuse me a minute. I'm sorry. I'm just adjusting that.
Yeah. It feels like, this old Oxford professor is telling you things, and that's nice.
So it's less Carl Sagan, more, old world explorer sort of.
Well, actually, I do think it is more Carl Sagan because this isn't, in the preface that I'm stuck in. He makes the point that this isn't going to be an encyclopedia of what happened. This is more about the important changes that took place through the history of man and influences of things. So he'll skip whole things, and you're not going to learn all the presidents of the United States in this. You're not going to learn when all the...
It skips centuries, right? I mean, I imagine there's times where these things just aren't...
I think he skips important things that maybe are important in a spectacular or glamorous type of way, like little glitzy things here and there that might show up, in favor of things that maybe are more dull but had more impact. So it's really just like how the pinball machine of history has banged the ball of man into the...
That's a great analogy.
What's the thing that when it goes down the drain? You know when the ball goes through the two flippers? I used to play pinball, and that's a thing.
Is there a name for it? I didn't know there was a term.
Yeah, whenever you're hanging around the hole.
It
has a name, though. It's like a slangy thing. I don't know. You know, I play pinball with guys and...
There was pinball slang? I missed out. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Well, yeah.
There's a whole pinball slang that I've never been privy to?
Definitely. You know, like somebody who's never played pinball before and they get up to the pinball machine and all they do is double flippers?
Yeah.
You know, that had a term. You call that kind of guy. There was a whole language. In the word that you'd use about that guy, he didn't understand it. You know, I can't remember it now.
I didn't know there was pinball shop talk.
Oh, yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's
and cool. Then there'd be guys like...
it's like CB radio talk.
Yeah.
It seems ridiculous, but there was a whole subculture.
Anything that has language around it, I love. Yeah. Like that has its own lingo that develops that excludes the people who don't do it, I think is really lovely.
Musicians have that.
Yeah.
There's a whole cult of language around music.
Yeah.
And if you hang around a band long enough, you get that. Same thing with any techies, like the roadies in a band.
Yeah.
They all have their own slang and lingo.
Right.
And that there's a whole, if you hang around them, and you feel dumb when you don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, you feel inferior, like, I wish I knew that.
Right.
That seems really cool. I want a glimpse into that world. I want to know what that's
like. I think secretly you want to be a part of some group that has developed its own culture that is separate from the greater culture, you know? And I don't feel like I have that. Like, I want to find some people that we just start making up things that are important to us, but there's nothing to
name. You just
want to
belong. That's all. We all just want to belong.
Yeah.
You want to have that.
But how? How do you do it?
I don't know. You play pinball, I guess.
I mean, that's what...
Or you schlep road cases. I'm not sure, but...
I used to... you did arcades when you were a kid, right?
Sure, yeah.
So I never had any money, so I'd go to arcades. I call it an arcade. It was like three... machines like Asteroids, Space Invaders, and maybe
like
a driving
pizza
machine.
Shop or something.
Yeah. And then maybe three pinball machines. But I would go there and just, it was at the bowling alley. We had a bowling alley in town.
Yep.
So I'd walk there and I'd bring like a dollar, you know, which could play through in about 15 minutes. But I would borrow money from kids. Like, hey, can I borrow a quarter?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, hey, can I borrow a quarter? Like, you know, maybe 300 or 400 times over the course of a 3-hour thing.
Yep.
And I would, you know, I was like this little grifter.
You were good at it.
I kept, I knew, you know, I could only borrow so much. If I borrowed a quarter from a kid, I would wait an hour or so before I asked him for another, you know. And it's weird for me to look back on that because I was like, what
part
of my life
is that? But you had the presence of mind to work it. You worked the room.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
And if I ran out, I would be checking the little slots to see if there's quarters that fell down.
Yeah, we
and
did that.
Occasionally, you'd find them.
Just it was once in 100, but that once in 100,
there.
You'd
it was
get
worth, it was
a quarter
worth the work.
50 cents. Yeah.
And then there's like the soda and candy machine area, and then a payphone. Check those things.
Absolutely.
Hit them a little bit.
Yeah.
Change return.
Yep.
it's like I was.
Or
this
the ball cleaner. There was a ball cleaner at the bowling alley.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's all kinds of things you could check. The payphones are really good because there'd always be somebody would be on the phone and they'd be making like a long distance call, so they had to put more than one dime in and have to put like a quarter.
Yeah.
So they'd throw a quarter in, but then they'd hang up.
Oh, yeah.
And the machine would give them like a nickel back.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe 15 cents or something, but they would just slam the phone down, walk away, and you'd hear a minute later, you're like,
right.
And you'd run over like, kind of nonchalantly stick your fingers in and grab like two nickels.
Well, that brings up the thing about there are some people who aren't gifted at vending machines. And when I was little, I knew who these people were. They'd be like novices. Mm-hmm. They'd come up to like the Coke machine and they'd
kind of
look at it. Yeah, and they kind of like, they'd look at their money in their hand and they'd be like,
I've got one.
How
right
do they get it in there?
I got a live one.
And you, yeah, and I, yeah. I'd be like, I'm watching this guy.
And your friends are like, what are you looking at? Like, nothing, nothing.
Yeah,
now you're competing because you're both thinking the same thing.
Because there could be a mistake that's about to happen that could end up, I could have a quarter in my hand.
Listen, there could be a mistake. And something could happen where I end up with a Snickers. That's all I'm going to say. I've come into some candy bars.
And also, I don't know why they do this, but those change things are usually really small. And there are some older people with their big arthritic knuckles that cannot and will not even try to get the change that comes out.
That's true. And they just swear at the machine.
Yeah.
And they walk away.
Well, I lost my quarter.
Or if you had to be quick sometimes because they would go to the counter.
Oh, to get it back,
And the older people would always be demanding, and they'd go up and the poor teenager by, okay, you know, he'd get the keys from the machine. And before he got there, you had to get the change.
Yeah.
So you'd go and you get the change. Now, this is where it really gets into murky territory, because now you've got the money, and you're gone, and now the teenager has to open the machine up. And he's pulling money out of the general little box that was in there.
I love that mysterious area. Of
so
inside.
Now he's given the senior citizen, who was probably 50, but at the time we thought of him as a senior citizen. He's given them a Milky Way and 50 cents. And you've got 50 cents now from the deal. So who's losing out on the deal? You're taking the house.
I know.
Well, and that's the great victory of youth.
Right.
When you've taken one on that, you've taken one from the house.
Because you know that the only reason they're there is to take from you.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. And they've taken you for the last 3.5 hours. You've been pawning quarters from your friends or semi-acquaintances. You don't even know who they are. And they're just like, take it. I don't want it, you know. And you've been playing Asteroids, and you've been, you have been giving that house so much money. Now you've got one back.
An alternate of that was once a visit, you could go up to like the bowling shoe guy and go, I lost my quarter in the machine. Once a visit. You could do that.
You could get away with it once.
Yeah.
As long as you weren't there weekly. I was in a bowling league for a while. And you couldn't, like, they would get to know you pretty well. Because we would be there, like, every Tuesday afternoon or whatever it was. And so you couldn't do that every week.
Yeah.
You know, it had to be more random than that. Or you had to get somebody else in your group. You'd have to rotate them.
Well, you know, you had to scam smart when you're low. And one of those things was, like, you know, the machines back then were pretty finicky. And they were always somewhat broken.
Yep.
You know, a little bit. And sometimes...
Well, they were all holdovers from like the mid-60s when we were growing up. Because this would be like I'm thinking like 1982, 1983, 84 in that area. But they were all like 15 or 20-year-old machines at that point.
Well, a lot of the pinball and the video games, those things were installed for
Well, those
life,
are recent.
You know?
Yeah. The pinball machines were older, but the video machines were... But I mean, like the vending machines?
Oh, yeah.
The vending machines are the bowling... Because the bowling alley in my town where I was growing up was pretty much on the verge of going out by the time I was about 12, 13. And it held on until I was about 15, 16. And only because it had... Like an ice cream counter and a roller rink attached to it. This is the only
diversified.
And for some reason, that's the people would go roller skating. And it was a dry town. It was like nobody was going anywhere for anything else.
Right.
So the machines were always like older than, you know, they were 20 something years old, and they would just never work right.
Well, the oldest would be the cigarette machines.
That's true.
Do you remember how long? How I loved that thing my grandfather smoked, and he would sit in the bowling alley, like just smoking, watching people play bowling.
What about you kids? Go get me some cigarettes.
And he would let me. He would let me do that thing.
75 cents, and you'd have to go over to the machine and
And you pull that thing out like a half mile. That little that's like a pool cue that you're pulling out of this machine, and just what a pleasant, unusual success story that is to pull that out and have the. The
it's
little
such
soft
a,
packet
I can't
of
imagine that anybody under, say, 30 would be just flabbergasted to see a cigarette vending machine in a restaurant or a bowling alley these days, but they were everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
And every lobby, and every time you'd walk into, like, any kind of, you know, restaurant, they would always be right there by the door. There was always a vending machine. And it wasn't as if you were as if it was policed.
No.
And there were kids that, even when I was...
Oh, was it illegal for a kid to buy it?
Yeah, but
then?
Nobody... Yeah, you know,
that's where
kids
would get cigarettes.
Yeah, you could go in and get them very easily.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, if somebody in the restaurant or the store caught you, you know, you lose your whatever it was, your 75 cents, whatever it was, I don't know. I never did it because I wasn't a smoker, but I remember how easy it was to see people just go up anybody. And oftentimes you'd have parents or grandparents give their kids, you know, here's a dollar. Give me some cigarettes and get some candy for yourself. You know?
Yeah.
And you go to the vending machine and you get
chuckles.
Yeah, and you get chuckles.
Chuckles.
Or you get the powder cigarettes where you pretend you were puffing. Well, grandmama had her, you know, her Pall Malls, you were blowing on your candy gum.
I
it was such a different world. It really was.
Yeah.
It was a very different time.
I think there's still, I still have seen those cigarette machines around there. They're in some weird bars now and then you'll see. I don't know who stocks them.
It's
or
like
who's
a retro throwback
them.
Kind of a thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Clapper. Okay. Oh, so.
It's turned into two old men talking about the way it used to be.
I know.
We're not that old.
Yeah, but it's a point that I think we just both share in our blood.
Yeah.
You know, and but
mid-century Americana.
The difference is I don't think we're that grumpy about it. You know, it's not like there's this Andy Rooney-ness to us.
Yeah.
Rah, rah, rah. I don't think we have that rah, rah, rah. Yeah.
Back then, I used to write my columns in my own blood, and I liked it.
Yeah.
It's not that.
I mean, because, for example, you know, we're telling that it sounds pretty awful back in these old cigarette pulling days. You know, not that great.
Well, it wasn't that great.
I'm scamming quarters.
It wasn't that great. Everything smelled.
Yeah.
Everything was dingy. I think things are much cleaner and brighter now.
They are very clean. My grandfather used to just throw crap out the window as we'd drive down the road. You know, if he bought something like a cigarette wrapper, he'd just toss it out.
Mm-hmm.
Everything got thrown out the window.
Yeah.
It was a land of litter bugs.
It was.
And the roads were filthy. And we didn't quite understand that that wasn't great. You know, it was just, everyone knew that there was nothing you could do about it. You know, we'll let the prisoners clean it up later.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a great theory.
But you would find a lot more trash just out in the woods.
Oh, yeah.
You know, 40 years ago, 34 years ago, I think you would stumble on a lot more stuff. There's still plenty of things out there, but it was amazing to me how much cleaner things seem now.
Well, if you also remember, a lot of the trash that would get discarded, you could then play with or manipulate for, you know, like a can.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that now. Like, I remember when I was little, I was always walking around with a couple cans stuck to my sneakers. You know, like you step on a can and it folds up around your shoe, and you just walk around like, or you could, you know, tear the can apart in half. And you could, you know, make things with it and use the metal and make a tiny can. I used to make tiny cans.
Like, really?
Yeah, you'd fold the can in half, break it in half.
Okay.
Then you'd open it back up, and then you would push the top piece into the small piece, and you'd make a mini version of the can.
Really?
It was just a dumb thing to do, but it was very enjoyable to do a good job at it, to make a convincing-looking mini version of the big can.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever tried that.
There's many things. And, you know, bottles were, of course, you know, you just, if you see a bottle, like, off in the weeds, grab a rock and try to break it.
Mm-hmm.
It was Target.
Yeah. I remember doing Target practice with things like that. We could find cans, half rusty cans, and you'd set them up and try to hit them with rocks.
Yeah. It's like caveman days.
Yeah.
I mean, not too long ago either. Hey, I'm going to shift.
Okay.
So I'm driving here, and like a mile from my house, there is this guy, and he's a handyman. Mm-hmm. He has a truck that he spray painted the words handyman on it and his phone number.
See, but you can't do that anymore and get away with it, right? People don't trust you anymore when you do that. They're like, hey, you can't be any good.
And I always wonder, like, who would call somebody that's a handyman that spray painted handyman on their truck?
Right.
And
he didn't even take the time to, like,
no,
carefully stencil it on. He simply freehanded handyman. Did he spell it correctly?
Yeah, I think so. It's hard. It's really messy.
He does quality work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he lived.
He's a craftsman.
For many years, he lived alone in this house that one of my neighbors calls the mess house. And I don't know why. And every time I go by, I'm like,
is it the Boo Radley house?
Well, it's not that messy.
It's
compared to like the others, it's an okay, normal looking house in some ways, but she calls it the mess house. And I walk by, I'm like, what's messy about it? That she's thinking. So anyway, he lived alone there for about 5 years. And then about 2 years ago, I don't know, maybe his son and his family moved in.
Mm-hmm.
His son's family moved in. They have a couple kids. But all of them have, the adults at least, have this strange habit. And I can't figure out what it is. When he was there, just by himself, whenever, and I don't know if this was all the time, but if I would drive by, I would often see him standing out in the road. It's not a busy road, but he's standing out in the road talking on the phone. You know, it's maybe like, it's that he walks down the end of his driveway, goes out into the road, which is the main road. You know, it's a two-way street.
Literally in the middle of the road, not
he'll,
the edge of
he'll
it.
Wander around the road talking on the phone.
Okay.
You know, his home phone, not a cell phone.
So the cordless phone that he...
Yeah, it's just like a cordless remote phone. And he'll just walk a little bit up the road and down the road. Now, that's kind of, you know, whatever. I don't know if he makes all his calls that way. But now that his family has moved in, his son and the wife also do this when they use the home phone. They walk around on the street with the home phone. And I think like maybe they don't want the other people to hear him talking.
Mm-hmm.
I can't put a reason to it. I drive by and I'm like,
this is one
and
of
they
those
look
things
at you. They I all would... do the same thing. They stare at you like you come toward them and they just turn toward you and stare as you go by like you're interrupting their private conversation. And, which, okay, whatever. But weird.
This is a great mystery. This is fantastic. See, now I want to know.
Why do they all do it?
Why do they do it?
I should have. He was the guy. The
what
young. The son was there
on
today, and I saw it, and I remembered how interested I am in this weird thing, and I should have taken a picture of him because
I want to know.
Next time I see one of them, I'm taking it. I'm gonna get a whole family selection: the old guy, the son, and the wife standing in the street talking on their
remote
phone.
Something's going on here. Something really.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. I don't know. They all. See, there's some...
I don't like when I can't solve a mystery from the outside of the mystery.
This would be a great beginning to a book. Some small town mystery series kind of thing. Yeah.
The outside phoners.
The cordless ones.
Tell me, Mr. James, why do you make your phone calls from the road? And your son does, too. And his wife.
I would love to know. That is a really bizarre. That's interesting.
Well, you can't speculate. It's unspeculatable.
Well, what's great about it is it's so wide open.
Right.
You could go crazy with it. It's probably something very simple, but it's crazy.
I think that he did. I think it's just enjoyable.
Yeah, I think that. But like, now, in the middle of January when it's snowing out, are they out there doing it?
Not as much. No, I mean, I have seen the old guy out there during all weathers, rain and snow and stuff like that.
Really?
Yeah, and he sometimes would just sit on the guardrail with a beer, smoking a cigarette, just talking, with his legs like hanging out in the road. He won't bring him in. That always drives me nuts.
Even if you're driving, he's got his legs sticking out.
Yeah. We also have a guy who lives on the next street over who's the hitchhiker. Okay. This is like a guy who's like 30 years old. He's kind of a hippie,
mm-hmm.
but he wears like EMS clothes or like winter sports clothing. So he's like, has a big beard and long hair, but he's dressed in like fancy ski jackets and snow pants. He has a dog. He has signs. He has like five different signs that he keeps in a little clear plastic thing.
He travels with
says them. Where he's going. But he'll sit in the road, often right at the end of our road, waiting for people to pick him up. And he will like sit in the middle of the road, like not in the middle of the road, but he sits in the lane that you're driving down with his dog, with his sign, waiting to be picked up. And you have to like totally drive. You know, he's not sitting in the grass. There's plenty of grass. He like sits in the road with his dog.
And then
he's so mad at you when you don't pick him up. And then he just goes down. There's this guy that fixes computers in a little plaza near the highway.
Mm-hmm.
He also rents movies at this place. And he plays these movies on a screen, like movie after movie, and this hitchhiker guy goes down and watches these movies.
Just sitting in the plaza?
So he's often like, he's sitting there with his little sign and it just says the name of the computer place, you know?
Because he wants to go down and sit in the parking lot and watch a movie.
Not in the parking lot. He'll go right inside and sit in a chair. He's friends with the owner now, but he just will go watch movies for like 4 hours. And then he'll go get his other sign that he's going back up to Mad River Road. And he'll go stand in, or sit in the road until somebody picks him up.
Really?
My wife's picked him up. He has a dog with him all the time, too. So you got to pick up this crazy guy in this weird outfit with his signs and sitting in the middle of the row with a dog.
Does he do any work, or he just goes back and forth to the computer place?
Lois thinks there's something wrong with him.
Yeah.
And I, you know, that's whatever. That's just probably true and whatever.
He's got his own, but he's got it worked out. He's got his He's got his thing.
Yeah, he finally got a bike in the summer, so he was biking sometimes, but still sometimes he wouldn't. He wasn't feeling it. It's not that far. It's like 3 miles to this computer place.
But he can't bring the dog and the bike.
No, he does. Yeah. He'll ride with the dog. The dog goes everywhere.
How big is this dog?
It's not big. It's like a little, it looks like Lassie, but small. I don't know dogs very well.
Yeah.
Like a small Lassie dog.
So he'll
carry
the dog in, like, with one hand while he's
biking? No. He'll ride slow and he'll have it on a leash.
Huh.
Yeah. It's weird stuff. You know,
you get some strange things happen up there in the mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I'm in a more of a neighborhood setting.
Have you been to my house?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that. It's not like, you know.
Well, I mean, it's
Appalachia.
Rural.
Appalachia.
No, but it's rural.
Right.
But you got power and water, so that's good.
Yeah.
No, yeah. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's a beautiful landscape. But I think that's the great thing about the small towns is it's not that there's not characters like that everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just that I think in a small town, it's you can see it. It shows up.
Yeah, you do.
Much more readily.
Right.
You know, there's no blending in as much. In my, it's funny because we were in the backyard. I was playing with my youngest daughter this morning, running around the yard after the rain stopped, and playing on the swing and so on. We've got some woods in the back. It's not big, only about half an acre, but we've got these woods in the back and then a wetland with brook, you know, a brook going through it. And we got lots of wildlife coming through, even though we're kind of in the middle of a town. And we've had blue heron down there. We have beaver. We had two vultures this week.
Turkey vultures?
Turkey vultures.
Oh, those are huge.
They're huge.
Scary.
Almost prehistoric looking.
Yeah.
You know, and then they come in. And so they've been resting on the pines, and they're just looking at us.
Yeah.
And they're just looking down at you. So I get some binoculars, and I'm looking at them, and they stare right at you. They stare you down. The vultures are... They have no fear whatsoever of you.
But they're very remote, though. You don't see them often.
No. They're I've secret. Never seen them around our neighborhood. I've never seen them at all.
Yeah. There's a whole range of, like, the wild creatures that live in New Hampshire that don't want to have anything to do with us. You know, like coyotes.
Yep.
What's that little... A little black weaselly thing.
A fisher cat or something?
A fisher cat.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're around. Foxes are a little, you'll see them.
They're elusive, though.
But they're in the fox and the owl are sort of the bridge creatures between the, you know, the birds that just hang out in your porch and the ones that are just never come close.
You might catch a glimpse now and then if you're out late at night in your headlights or something like that. Every once in a while I've seen fox. But what's funny is our neighborhood, my wife and I were talking to somebody about the fact, we love the fact that, oh, they were talking about there's so much, there's a lot of ticks this year.
Oh, yeah.
But we don't really have them as much in our neck of the woods because we don't have deer coming through. We don't have deer. We don't have bear.
Yeah.
You know, we're too populated an area. We don't get that kind of big game. But at the same time, we have the geese, the ducks in the brook. We have the blue herons. We have the, you know.
Very birdy.
It's very, yeah. But it's interesting because you have that little slice of wildlife. But that's what's great about New Hampshire, I think. You've got some of that. You can have a little bit of everything in that. And to me, that's what makes small towns interesting, is you can get these characters like that. And there's a couple of characters around that are always holding signs.
Yeah.
Around, you know, doing signs. And what's funny about them is they always says, you know, we'll work for food, but they're always wearing some pretty nice clothes.
Yeah.
Which is one thing. I don't know about that. But then it's always interesting to me that every once in a while, you just see them kind of like close up shop for the day.
Yeah.
They close up and they go back to the Honda. And it's just kind of a little disingenuous to me.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, that's their thing. They've figured it out. They've got something going on. That's how they work it.
Those people make money.
They do.
You know, they make
do.
Like 50,
and
60
I
bucks
just,
a day.
I like the fact that we still live in a world like that, that there's still the kind of weird low-level scam going on.
I wouldn't mind the, I hate the guilt, the presentation of guilt, the look that, you know, it's one of the tools of the trade.
Yeah.
You know, they're looking at you and they're saying, if you don't give it to me, I'm going to give you a little bit of this and you're going to feel guilty. So, and they're good at it. They're guilt presenters.
I just don't feel that way anymore. I don't. I think when I was younger, I did. But now that I realize that it's another grifting scam.
Yeah. I see through it now.
Yeah, you know, I see through it, and I think that first time that I saw that kind of like the regular, the guy he's got his three or four corners in town, and he works with a one day, and then he's at the and he's almost like a schedule.
Yeah,
and I got to give him that, you know, he's out there doing he knows the schedule, but and then I see him occasionally. I've actually gone by and he's eating his candy bars. he's kind of like taking a break. He's on break. He's got a cigarette, and he's sitting down for a while. And then he stands up and he grabs his sign again.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know. I just feel like, well, you know, I don't really feel the guilt anymore. I don't feel that.
That's funny because those things, it makes it seem like it's a choice of that as a job rather than a different job.
Yeah.
Like I would rather do this job. I could do those other ones. I've decided on this one though.
Yeah.
This is what I like to do. This one. Exactly. I make it on my own. I make the money come out of nothing. Just holding the sign.
I'd almost rather. I'd give him a buck if it was the signs. Like, I really don't want to work fast food.
Yeah.
I'll be honest with you. I'd rather be out here in the sun or in the rain. I'd rather be sitting here, and maybe say hi to you.
Yeah.
I'd be like, you know what? You're genuine. I like that. You're an entrepreneur. Here's your dollar.
You occasionally do see the clever guys.
Yeah.
That write, you know, will sing for food, and they write a little poem or something like that. But well, there isn't a lot
it's
of.
It's like street musicians. Like you can respect that as an occupation.
Yeah.
To some degree, you can say, well, yeah, you're working a craft. You're trying to do some public performance.
Yeah.
You're doing some art. You know, but when you're saying work for food, I have 18 kids on the cardboard sign. But you're driving the late model Accord.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm buying it. I'm not quite sure that I'm in with it. I don't think I can go with that one. You know, you're overselling it.
Right.
Yeah.
We're talking about lawnmowers. So I have these. I think of them as like really good, like they're in tune with the cycle of life and the world. These two neighbors, and they're completely able to do everything. Like they can fix their cars. They can drive heavy machinery. You know, like if their chimney cracks or something like that, they fix it themselves. You know, they get like a little cherry picker. They'll be up there mortaring it out. They could do everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they also seem to follow the seasons similarly. So like I think it was about 2 weeks ago. Saturday morning, they both start up the lawnmowers for the first time. Both of them at the same time. You know, I'm thinking like it's a little early. I'm looking at the grass. It's not quite in yet. You know, it's starting. The green has begun.
But are they the guys that are like preparing the lawnmower? They're like sharpening blades,
yeah,
and oil changing.
Yeah, they have it all done.
Yeah, I haven't changed oil in mine in 18 years. It just keeps going. When it goes, I'll throw it away and get a new one.
Do you have the thing, though? I don't have a place to put our lawnmower inside. So it's our lawnmower is in sort of like a little lean-to. Mm-hmm. It has a roof over it. But every single year, like I just started up today, I had to empty the gas out and replace the gas.
Oh, do you? Yeah.
Because the last 3 or 4 years, there's like water will accumulate in the engine and won't start up. And I put like this, I can't remember what it is, but it removes the water from the gas and then it starts up.
Does that work?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it does. It's better probably just to empty the gas out than to try to treat it with this stuff. But when I was little, I don't remember things not functioning. Like the lawnmower that we had, doesn't matter. Year after year, all you needed to do was add gas, and it just lasted forever and ever.
Yeah.
We have a new lawnmower, and after one season, I try to start it up, and that little water and the gas is there. That seemed like an old man problem, like a... When you're a kid, that doesn't happen. When you're grown up, you have to deal with it.
You know,
it's like
exactly.
If it's a kid thing, kids.
But you don't see it.
To a kid.
Yeah, your dad just got it going for you. Made you cut the grass, but he had to deal with the
Yeah, dads have to add chemicals.
Yeah.
And kids, it's just going to work. You know, the lawnmower, like, would see the kid come out and go.
But when you see your neighbors doing this, does it make you feel like inadequate in some way? Like they're the self-sufficient Yankee, but you're not really sure. You wouldn't get up on your roof and repoint your chimney, right?
No. The thing is that they mow the lawns exactly at the right moment. Whenever is the exact right moment to mow their lawns. Like, for whatever reason, when they mowed their lawn, I know that was the right time to do it. It's a healthy way to start the growing season of the grass. Like, they cut the grass at that moment, and then it's all going to jump up because of that. You know, like, that was the right time. And the next time they cut it will be the exact right time to cut it the second time. They just seem to know these things about, like, how it's sort of like a farmer's sense. Like, they have the farmer's sense while also being, you know, mechanically knowing and inclined. Like, they can fix anything, and they can from little machines to their entire house, you know, or a road.
Yeah.
You know, they build the bridge that goes over our river, and they grade our road. You know, they do all these things and they put rocks down, and they just know all these things. So I always feel, I feel like that's another one of those things where I feel like, man, I'm like a child in the world compared to these people who know these different rhythms and when you're supposed to do stuff, and who gave them this information? How did they learn it? And I don't have any access to it.
Passed down from generation to generation.
This is why I'm reading the history of the world.
Yeah, you want to learn, because you want to learn how to fix your lawnmower?
I don't know. It's the
same
impulse. Impulse. Yeah. Yeah. Chapter 7.
Wherever he
early man had no sense of lawnmowers.
The old lamplighter of long, long ago. His snowy hair was so much whiter beneath the candle glow. The old lamplighter of long. Could hear the patter of his feet as he came toddling down the street. His smile had a lonely heart, you see. If there were sweethearts in the park, he'd pass a lamp and leave it dark, remembering the days that used to be. For he recalls when dreams were new, he loved someone who loved him too, who walks with him alone in memory. He made the night a little brighter wherever he would go. The old lamplighter of long, long ago. Now if you look up in the sky, you'll understand the reason why the little stars at night are all aglow. He turns them on when night is here. He turns them off when dawn is near. The little man we loved out long ago. He made the night a little brighter wherever he would go. The old